In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Gray Mulligan Lane Patreon channel. We are recording this in late November, the week of Thanksgiving 2024. The world is a crazy place. Who knows what's happening, but we still get to nerd out about comic books with our friends, which makes me happy. I am joined by my dear friend and one of my favorite guests, Arturo Rojas, today, and someone I've interacted with online so much and I'm meeting for the first time on the show today, the lovely Manolis Mamvounis from Greece, hailing all the way from the other side of the pond. Welcome to you both. We're going to be talking about a character called the Red Queen, and I'm going to give the really easy, dense part fast. Jean Grey is a character that we love. Chris Claremont wrote the story where she dies as part of the Phoenix Force. They bring her back, but Chris had already introduced a character named Madeline Pryor, who marries Scott Summers, and they have a baby, Nathan. Well, when Jean comes back, Chris gives us the story, I think somewhat reluctantly, that Madeline had been a clone the entire time. She then has the Inferno event. She becomes the Goblin Queen. She dies. She comes back. She dies. She comes back. Much like Jean Grey, we have them both interacting together in the comics these days. But today, we're going to take a weird jaunt into the 90s, where things get very, very strange and very, very complicated. This is one of the most continuity-dense episodes ever, in that it requires so much X-Men knowledge. Outside maybe of the Summers Family episode that I did with my friend Philip, this one is just a weird, weird side turd. Let me have you both introduce yourselves, and I'm going to have you answer the simple question. Jean or Madeline? Manolis, welcome to Gray Mulligan Lane.
Hello, thank you for having me. My name is Manolis. My pronouns are he, she. I hail from Greece. I have a long history with the X-Men. I used to be much more prominent in the online X-Men community back 20 years ago. I was running the Retro X-Punk website for X-Force and X-Statics by Mike Allred, and then I did a lot of work with on Bleeding Cool and with Comics Nexus and 411 Mini. These days, I'm mostly active on the Greek X-Men community. The question about Madeline or Jean, I think it's obvious. It's always Madeline for me. I jumped at the chance to do this. And the reason I think Madeline is a more interesting character, because she's been allowed to fall. Jean, I think, remains infallible in many cases. Any stories that Jean has fallen from grace, it's always been someone pretending to be her, in a way. So I love the whole drama behind Madeline and her story.
Now, Manolis and I were talking just before we started. We have a mutual friend in the guest on the show, Michael Dialinus, who drew the Puppet Master for my wall. Michael was on the show with me a while back. Manolis, do you want to talk about the piece? You told me you had a piece commissioned by Michael that just made me smile ear to ear.
He was doing a commissions a few years back. I'm good friends with Mike for many years. And the piece I thought, Dupe from X-Force, Mike Allred's X-Force, and Howard the Duck having a pillow fight. I will send a scan to post online.
Which is just adorable.
It's just delightful.
Which, Dupe having a pillow fight with Howard the Duck is something I would entirely expect Arturo to have tattooed on his lower back, perhaps. Arturo, welcome back to Gray Mulligan Lane.
Not my lower back tattoo. Hi, everyone. So happy to be here. Thank you, Chad. I'm Arturo. My pronouns are he, him. Madeline or Jean. I'm a big fan of clones, so I'm going to go with Madeline. But I will say that the Madeline that we're going to delve into today is the toughest one. This is the Red Queen is rough.
Arturo, you're one of my favorite people to hang with. I have you on the show all the time. But ladies and gentlemen, Arturo is a married lady these days. He's a little harder to pin down.
Yes. Oh, my God. I can't believe we're breaking the news here. Yes, I am deeply in love, and I proposed, and we're engaged, and there's no date set, but I am spoken for.
You're delicious, and I'm so happy to have you both here. This is going to be fun. Okay, I am invoking what we are now calling on the show, the Ruth Ann Principle. Ruth Ann is one of my listeners who doesn't know a lot about X-Men, so this is where I'm just going to take it real quick. Scott and Jean love each other. The Phoenix is the manifestation of all mutant kind, but also kind of the final evolution of Jean Grey, but also kind of the fundamental force of creation, death, and rebirth in the universe. Truly, that's what it is. It's very, very complex. Jean bonds with the Phoenix Force and kind of burns out of existence. And then she'll go live in a place called the White Hot Room and come back every once in a while. Madeline Pryor was created by Mr. Sinister as a clone of Jean, who is then sent to marry Scott because Mr. Sinister's obsessed with Scott and Jean's genes. She then, Madeline, has a baby named Nathan Charles Christopher Summers, named after Mr. Sinister, who gets infected with the techno-organic virus and has to be taken far into the future, where he is raised by Scott and Jean's daughter, Rachel, from an alternate timeline, who comes to our timeline and becomes Phoenix, also Prestige, also Marvel Girl, also Ascani. In this far future, she's called Mother Ascani. She's an old lady, but now she's young. Don't worry about it. She's Captain Britain's girlfriend. It's great. But in the future, she raises baby Nathan, but Apocalypse has cloned him, and there's an evil version of Nate that doesn't have the techno-organic virus called Strife. Strife is the evil, unhinged twin. They all come back into the present, and things are insane. Then we jump to the mid-90s, where the child of Charles Xavier goes back in time and creates an alternate reality by murdering Charles Xavier on accident. And that results in a place called the Age of Apocalypse, which is an alternate reality that is beloved to X-Men fans because it is amazing. But in this world, a different version of Mr. Sinister uses the DNA of Scott and Jean to create another template of Nathan, who's a teenage, like really hot version. His name is Nate Gray. He does not have the techno-organic virus, which means he has incredible telepathic and telekinetic skills that may like make him mad and like drive him to godhood. He's like an omega level mutant of the highest caliber. When the Age of Apocalypse ends, we not only have Cable and Strife running around in our reality, but we also now have a character named X-Man, although he never really goes by that. His name is Nate Gray. He's in a book called X-Man. He's a teenage version dropped into a world that he never made. We'll use a Howard the Duck quote there. He's trying to figure out his life, and he somehow draws upon the essence of his world's Cable. Like, Cable's the version of him in his world. Draws on, like, the essence of the remains of Cable's mother, Madeline Pryor, who at this time is dead after being the Goblin Queen in Limbo. And he reassembles her because he's looking for something familiar. And he creates a version of Madeline Pryor, who's like a hot redheaded lady that he doesn't really know who it is, but she's hanging out with him and they have a familiarity between them. The character we're about to discuss is that version of Madeline Pryor. It's the Nate Gray assembled creation after he lands on Earth 616, after arriving from the Age of Apocalypse, during the time when Jean Grey was back, but Madeline Pryor was dead, and Cable and Strife are both running around. We're going to mention all of these characters in today's episode, which is why I am drawing that quick family tree, and holy shit, can X-Men get complicated already. When you toss the fucking Red Queen into it, it goes crazy. Manolis, what were your thoughts initially when we proposed the idea of doing the Red Queen?
First of all, you did such a good job of that, because I recently tried to explain to my boyfriend what I'm going to be talking about in this episode. It took me 30 minutes, and at the end he said, "No wonder you're having memory trouble. You have all this always in your head. How do you keep track of everything?"
You gotta fucking draw like a map, like a genealogical chart.
But I love the soap opera of it. Well, to be honest, at first, that's why I was surprised when you sent me the notes, because I understood we were going to talk about the Red Queen, just the character from the Counter-X era.
From Warren Ellis's concluding arc on X-Men years later, yes.
Exactly. And then it led to a lot of research on things like fandom and Wikipedia, and I realized there's so much confusion online about where Madeline Pryor ends and when the Red Queen starts, which I guess we're going to get to when we get to. So this is a category where no one knows at what point she stops being herself and starts being someone else pretending to be her. And that's already exciting enough because we get to do a lot of fun pondering, retconning on our own.
Yeah, so jump to the late 90s. Madeline Pryor was kind of an untouchable property at the time. The Summers family was already crazy. We had Strife and Cable and now X-Man and Jean and Scott, and it's nuts. If you love soap operas, this is that one character, that like larger than life character who had that like huge death after just being a fucking tyrant and sleeping with everyone's husband, and then she's dead at the end, and now they like brought her back in like a dummy form. It's like a shape-changing Madeline. It's like the energy of capturing this character, the pussy of it, like of it all, is just like really
intense. It's like they brought her back in the next season with a different actress, so they had to Like smudge it. I will admit that my initial reaction to let's do an episode on the Red Queen was abject terror, because it's one of my little Marvel blind spots when it comes to X-Men. I feel like I know a lot about many characters, but Red Queen, I kind of was like, oh yeah, like when Madeline Pryor was, yeah, no problem. So I take that back. Actually, it wasn't abject terror. It was more like, sure, why not? And realizing what I'd gotten myself into, that's when the terror crept in. Because, and bravo to you, Chad, because your mutant power is definitely being able to take this insane, complex, labyrinthian lore and condense it into something that makes some kind of sense. So God bless you.
My mutant power is fucking spreadsheets. That's what my mutant power is. That's all I do for this fucking show, is it's spreadsheet after spreadsheet. Now, Nate Gray, I was reading the comics at the time. Nate Gray coming back into the main Marvel universe as like a hot young Cable who doesn't have the techno-organic virus. It was kind of exciting at the time. And this book I really loved, actually, especially the early book, the stuff with Threnody, the stuff with like, how's he going to react when he meets like his parents in this world, or when he finally crosses paths with Cable? What's that meeting with that Dark Beast character going to look like, right? Because there's these different characters running around from the Age of Apocalypse. What happens when he runs into Forge or Sinister or these other characters from his reality that he knew really well? They also draw him so hot. Roger Cruz's version of Nate Gray in that like mesh shirt, like the see-through, and he's all muscular, definitely part of my teenage fantasy sessions. I'm not sharing too much information, but this character imprinted on me in like a very sexual way as like a young teenager.
Absolutely. He was such a, God, this is gonna sound so narcissistic, but he was kind of like this, I don't want to say like a stand-in character, but it was like fun to fantasize like being him. You know what I mean? Like there's something about him that was like, oh, he's so powerful and he's hot and he's, yeah, I don't know. I
thought you were going to say like, it was fun to see this hot character that reminded me of myself on the page. Finally, I saw me in media.
Representation matters. What can you say? I was never into the himbo type, even as a teenager, because I was probably 13 at the time. I was being more towards, well, older Cable or Wolverine or that kind of bear physique. Well, he looked cute. And okay. Roger Cruz, bless him, this was where he really found himself in this.
Yeah, time. Yeah, he incredible.
Really had his own signature style there.
So we're going to cover some of this relatively quickly, but Madeline being back in the X-Men's world is just fucking crazy drama. Madeline gives like Emma Frost energy times like 12 in this era, right? Scott and Jean are married. They just went to the future for 12 years where they lived in like alternate bodies and like raised their child. And now they're back in the past. They just got through all of the strife craziness. The legacy virus has been released. It's just drama, drama, drama. The Summers family shit. The Adam X is happening around this time. There's the mysterious Summers brothers. Sinister is just such a force. So now X-Man is here. And the first thing he does is he lands in Switzerland in a Swiss chalet.
As you do. Yeah,
as you do. And he meets a man named Sven. When he manifests, he doesn't know that he did it at first, but he manifests or like corporealizes Madeline Pryor. She's red hair, green cloak, just fucking gorgeous. He doesn't know it's his mom, but the writers do. They're not related.
But do they care about it? No, they
They're
don't.
Not related by like bloodline in the same reality, but none of us want to do that Back to the Future thing where George McFly goes back into the past and makes out with his mom. Or there's that story from Futurama where Fry goes back into the past and like has sex with his grandma and like becomes his own grandfather in his genetic bloodline. It's giving that energy. It's really
like, just because it's an alternate reality doesn't make it okay. You know what I mean? If your line is like, well, if it was time travel in this reality, no, but it's Earth 998 or whatever.
If these two characters were sexually active and a later writer retconned, oh, by the way, that's Nate's mom, we could blame that later writer. The earlier writers wouldn't know. But the earlier writers here know the whole time that Madeline is the mother of Nathan as far as Cable. But this is is just, I don't know. This is an era where if you go back to the Age of Apocalypse Legion quest story that kicked that off, Legion goes back in time and there's a scene where he's like trying to fuck his own mom, Gabrielle Haller. And you're like, oh, it's giving that like Joaquin Phoenix from Gladiator energy where he wants to fuck his sister in the movie, like more than anything, right? And like, that's how you can tell he's a real bad guy. Madeline's giving that energy. She's kind of got this odd, vapid presence the whole time. Nate feels drawn to her, almost like she's a witch that like has him in a spell. And at the beginning, it's like flirty, weird, and like sexy, but later they're like fully fucking and sharing a bed. They're like in a like sexual relationship before we get the big revelation at the end. So this is the character, when we bring up the Red Queen to X-Men fans, this is one of those like five characters that X-Men fans are like, oh, no, no, this, I don't want to talk about this one.
I will challenge you later on them sleeping together. I don't agree, but we will get there when we get there.
Oh, you don't think they're fucking?
No, no. I made specific notes against them fucking, thankfully.
No, they're absolutely fucking, and in hindsight, X-Men should have been titled Oedipus X because it's giving. And it feels like they're going for that in a way, but it doesn't ever get there. It's so weird. It's such a weird choice. It's so weird.
The other piece we're not really recognizing out loud is Nate Gray, despite the fact that I just called him hot a bunch of times in a row. He's canonically 17 when he comes to the Marvel Universe, which even if he's 18, this is a woman. This is a mother. It's very like cougar with the teenage boy. It's very like, what's that lady's name? Mary Kay Letourneau, like, you know, sleeping with her student like energy in some ways. We're just gonna own it and let it be there. But Manolis, I am happy to hear any arguments to the counter.
I think he's even younger than 17. I think Ellis establishes him as 17 when he takes over, but that's a good few years that he's been around. I think he's like 15. He's probably properly not legal through the whole thing.
So X-Men number 5, when she first shows up, she pulls her hood off. My name is Madeline Pryor. And readers are like, oh no, we went there. Alternate Nate manifesting an alternate Madeline in Marvel 616, where Cable has his own title. Scott and Jean are happily married. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Like, what's gonna happen? When we jump to 6, the captions let us know she says her name is Madeline Pryor. As Nate struggled with a fever, she suddenly appeared, offering aid to him. That mystery Nate finds unsettling as he finds her eyes beguiling. She says, things like this happen for a reason, as if we were destined to meet.
I'm not so sure about that. I never believed in destiny. How can I be sure you're not a spy for Apocalypse?
Because I have no idea what you're talking about. You'll learn enough about how valuable I can be to you.
Put yourself in my place. You resemble this woman. I don't know very much about, but I was thinking about her and then you appeared like in a dream, you know?
I'm not a dream, Nate. The woman you say I look like, what do you know about her?
Not much. A name, I think. Jean Grey. What about Sinister?
She fucking slaps him right across the face. Don't ever mention that name. I can feel his evil. Do you know him? Is that why we're together? Oh God, what's happened to me? And she collapses in tears and he holds her. She's sobbing.
It's okay. I won't bring up his name again. Maybe that's why we're together.
Okay. Madeline Pryor 101. Never mention Jean Grey. Madeline Pryor 102. Never mention Mr. Sinister. Like, bad, bad, bad. Now, Nate in his reality toward the end of the Age of Apocalypse met that version's Cyclops and Jean. Jean has short red hair and Cyclops has like one eye and long hair. It's a whole different energy.
It's so bizarre. And I love that. I think it ends with him staring at her, standing in front of a fireplace, which is how Scott fell in love with her in the original issues.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a direct parallel, which makes it even weirder. And I don't know whose fault all of this is. I don't know if it's Jeff Loeb. I don't know if it's the editor. I don't know who thought of this. But it sort of started there and then continued with the later writers. But it's very clearly that this is where they're going with.
In the mid-90s, I think this was just acceptable storytelling. So later, he notices her by the firelight. She looks so lovely. And yet, like, she doesn't have a care in the world. There has to be a way to find out what she wants and why she's here. Nate says,
Madeline, you want to find out some answers, right?
Do you even have to ask?
Okay, then. I know this sounds crazy, but there's this thing that I can do where I can go into other people's heads. And maybe, just maybe, I can help you remember what you know about, you know, whatever.
I'm not sure. You want to go into my head? Are you a psychic or something? What if something goes wrong? What if something bad happens? happens.
Look, I've done this before, and we have to start somewhere.
All right, for some reason, I don't find this odd in the least. And he looks at her brain and finds the giantest fucking, like, most monstrous version of Havoc in there. It's just, like, bursting with fucking plasma energy. It just blows up, like, the whole fucking building. Now, the reason this is funny is Havoc is always Cyclops' like, try-hard little brother, right? He's always, like, picking up Scott's, like, sloppy seconds. I love Havoc. I really do. He's the company man. So after Cyclops goes back to Jean, Havoc ends up with Madeline for a while. And she ends up just, like, domming him. She, like, puts him in some, like, little shredded clothes and keeps him on a leash. And, like, that happens again in the comics later. So the fact that he's in her head is hilarious.
Listeners, it's worth the check. It's worth looking at. It's horrific. Also hilarious. I would have preferred Havoc in his little skimpy Goblin Prince outfit. But, you know, weird. Again, just a weird choice. And something, spoiler, that leads to nothing. That never comes back. There's no, like, Havoc isn't really relevant. So it's just weird.
We're going to jump to the end of this story very quickly. The retcon later by Stephen Grant is that this isn't actually our Madeline Pryor. It is an alternate version of Jean from another reality who's super evil, who's trying to manipulate Nate Grey and, like, win him over so that she can use him as a tool in her world conquest. We'll get there in a minute. But if we read this character's motivations as it's evil alternate Jean who knows what she's doing, she's putting up a psychic front in her mind to block Nate's ability to find out who she is, right? And that kind of makes more sense than this craziness, but she's adopting this identity. She's posing as good Jean's evil twin in our world. Okay. Manolis, thoughts?
I talked with Steve Grant. I had the last episode you did together, and he was a bit ambiguous. What he told me was that, well, he had never read X-Men before, like he said in your podcast, but in his thoughts in Warren Ellis's plot, she just replaced her a few issues before they joined. They never intended to have the retcon that it was always Jean Grey, Red Queen, having replaced her. And I think it would be fun for us to find out and theorize where it might have happened, the swap. For me, this is still as intended Madeline Pryor.
Written as intended at the time, yes. Much like Madeline was never intended to be a clone of Jean, this was never intended to be evil alternate Jean from another reality.
Wait. God, the impact of Madeline Pryor on my mind, it just shattered. So it's actually an evil Jean, not an evil Madeline from another timeline?
Correct.
Do we get into what happened to the Madeline of, or not timeline, of that Earth?
Well, let's pause there till we get to the Red Queen.
Sorry.
No, you're okay.
And I know it's in the notes. That's what I'm saying. It breaks itself in my head.
The original Madeline story was a retcon itself in the fact that she's a clone of Jean. And now this is a retcon later by editors saying this is an evil Jean posing as Madeline. Just craziness. Okay, I'm going to cover some stuff kind of quickly, and we're going to, like, work our way through this character. Because Madeline, I don't know what they intended for her, but her story gets drug out for so long and ends in some weird places. But there's a couple really banger issues that if you read this character as Madeline, it's great. But when you read it as evil Red Queen, it's really weird. So the Sugar Man is another guy from the Age of Apocalypse. He sends a mercenary named Rex to attack Nate. Their chalet gets destroyed. Nate and Madeline end up in Paris, where the caption tells us they could be young lovers out on a stroll in the Paris night. They fall into a fountain. His telekinesis gives out. He says, Madeline, I'm not real good at saying stuff, but ever since, I don't know, you make me smile. And she says, I know, there's something special between us, isn't there? They go out for food. He's eating a giant fucking sandwich. He comes from a, you know, like a wasteland Armageddon world. He asks her again about the Havoc monster in her brain. And she says, I don't know if it relates, but I've been having flashes of being hurt, terribly, terribly hurt by people from my past. A group of men and women who call themselves X-Men. And she pulls some money out of her boobs and she pays for lunch, and then she goes to investigate a mysterious woman in the shadows who's calling to her. And Manolis, who is this?
Ah, Celine. Also making a triumphant return to the books. I was so happy to have Celine back.
Can you give us the 2-sentence explanation of Celine?
Oh, dear. And then she... and then some sorceress. Celine! Ancient sorceress who had her base of power in Nova Roma, which is a whole different issue on its own.
I said 2 sentences. We don't have time for Nova Roma today.
Okay, 2 sentences. immortal, thousands-year-old mutant witch who lives off other people's energy, who has her base of power in ancient Rome.
Evil witch who wants to eat you. That's kind of what you need. She's a crazy Claremont villain, super powerful, gives very, like, the witch from Hansel and Gretel vibes. I wish she was in Agatha All Along as the big villain at the end, right? Like, crazy sorceress, like, crazy powerful, insane, immortal woman. So her pulling into Madeline Pryor is nuts. She's looking for a power source to be able to get entrance back into the Hellfire Club, which is crazy because she just could eat whoever's in the Hellfire Club. But she's bringing Madeline back as a bargaining chip for power to, like, build her base of power back up. This is a woman who likes having, like, a fucking empire of servants, and she can pick the prettiest ones to fuck and then eat later, right? Like, that's kind of her energy. So she pulls Madeline Pryor away from Nate almost immediately. They had, like, one date, and then Madeline's gone. Look within yourself, Madeline Pryor. You cannot deny the life you are destined to have, but was ended before you could reach your true potential. At my side, you will rise to a new height. At my side, all your dreams will come true. You know what I'm offering you. So she keeps Madeline sequestered away, and then there's a character that gives very Arturo Rojas energy. This is Ella, the French maid. Arturo, do you want to talk about Ella?
You see Ella, and she's very reminiscent of almost like Tessa in the Hellfire Club. She's like the sexy assistant, but it's taken to, like, let me save you the trouble. There is no depth like that. She is not a new Tessa. She is literally just a sexy maid.
She's giving Colleen Camp from Clue. You guys know Clue the movie?
Yes, very that. She's very that. She's asking probing questions, but yeah.
So weirdly, I don't know if, like, Ella and like Madeline are fucking. There's a lot of weird, like, energy between the two of them. Madeline cuts her hand, but, like, heals herself. She doesn't feel pain. Nate, meanwhile, ends up in a kind of on again, off again relationship with a character that I love and a lot of Cerebro fans love. This is the character of Threnody. Manolis, do you want to give us the 2-sentence explanation of Threnody?
Oh, I'd rather not.
Threnody is a mutant gifted / cursed with the power of detecting death. And when the legacy virus is released, she is overwhelmed. Her powers get out of control and sinister with some fucking shenanigans from the Beast on X-Men. Let's throw that in there. Sinister uses her as he does. And she is finally broken free, and she is on the run, and she's looking to be Nate Gray's super hot, gorgeous black girlfriend.
Yeah, she's a phenomenal character, really interesting. We recently did a Patreon on the character Empyrean, who's a character that draws on pain and turns it to power, much like Dazzler draws on sound and turns it to light. This is a character who draws death energy and turns it into power. Madeline is not happy about it. Threnody later has a baby with Nate. It's like the forgotten Summer's child, who's like a little vampire baby who gets wiped out of existence. We're not gonna focus on that today, but I love Threnody. We'll talk more about her another time. We get an image of Madeline in a bubble bath in Paris. Caption says, luxury, pure and simple. Scent of lemon and roses sharing the air with the strains of Tchaikovsky. Warm bubbles tickling my skin, tickling my scalp. And a sparkling Bordeaux from my absentee hostess's own vineyard. Nothing but the best for a guest of Celine. Again, very Emma Frost energy. There's a lot of interactions with Ella. In 16, we finally get kind of a little bit of confirmation on Madeline. She has no idea where she's from. Finds a room full of corpses in Celine's castle because Celine just ate. Celine is brimming with power, very wet and ready. Like, that's the energy we're getting. Madeline isn't surprised, and she's like, yeah, let's go. And Madeline gets, like, a new leather design. There's pants with purple trim and gold chains and thigh-high black boots and spiked heels and black gloves to the elbow, which, again, Madeline Pryor, the original, was the Goblin Queen, who gives very, very sex appeal energy. And they are ready to go interface with the Hellfire Club. So I'm kind of rushing through that part quickly, but Madeline was with Nate for like 2 issues, and now she's been with Celine in the background for like 15. Like, a lot's going on in his life outside of this.
It's very interesting knowing the behind the scenes of it all. Jeff Loeb did an interview recently with Dayspring, I think, Power of X-Men, and he basically said when they greenlit the book, Bob Harras came to him and said, yeah, you can have an X-Men ongoing, but Madeline Pryor is also there, without giving him any explanation. And Jeff Loeb basically quit the book over it because he he didn't want to write Madeline Pryor. And you can sort of see because Loeb lives around issue 7 or 8 and he writes Madeline out as soon as he leaves. Then Ostrander comes in. He has no interest in Madeline. And she just comes back with Terry Cavanaugh a few issues later. And he literally has her having her own little backup story issue. I think it's the most interesting stuff that happens with her in this run because it's a very interesting descent into evilness, the way she's tempted by Celine. It's very Interview with the Vampire. So she's Tom Cruise to her Brad Pitt.
I'm friends with Terry. We haven't talked about the Red Queen. I recently invited Bob Harris to my show and he goes, oh no.
You and Terry are still friends because you haven't talked about the Red Queen.
No, I bet Terry would talk to me. I was in Terry's house for a party a few months ago in New York, which was really lovely. And he has like X-Men art and toys all over. He's a lovely guy. Really, really nice person. Okay, we're going to jump to number 20, X-Men. Celine and Fitzroy. We don't have time to talk about Fitzroy, but gay green supervillain from the future. Love him, love him. He's one of my favorite 90s villains. Celine and Fitzroy and Ella take Madeline to New York for her big debut at the Hellfire Club. She's in like a nice like sleeveless top. Her boobs are out. She's in the shortest shorts, like ass hanging out the back of her shorts kind of energy. She goes to the New York City with Ella, where she sees Nate flying away, but he doesn't notice her. Then they go to this Hellfire Club so Madeline can show her power. She wants her place like of influence among mutants again. Sebastian Shaw is there and he's like, oh yeah, she's nothing important. And Tessa is here. We don't have time to talk about Tessa either, but another incredible character who's part of the Hellfire Club and the X-Men. This is Sage for those of you that know this character. Sebastian, I suggest you look again, closer this time, deeper, past the facade of her flesh to the flame of her heart, real and raging. Do you see what I see? The slow smoldering fire in her eyes? And Sebastian kisses Madeline's hand. I see no fire, Tessa. No flame, except for the inferno itself. Now, again, this is the character associated with the incredible X-Men event, Inferno. Now, we're jumping around quickly. We're going to jump to X-Men 96, which is an annual. You jump to the second story. Tessa enters Madeline's mind while she's sleeping. She's trying to figure out what the big secret is. And she finds like this serene and cloudy landscape, but it quickly like mutates into dark versions of the X-Men fighting Tessa, like manifesting in the astral plane. There's a deeper dig and she finds Madeline cuddling her baby. But her baby, this is Nate, gets stolen by Cyclops and Jean Grey, which it is kind of an accurate read, right? Like Madeline's kid got stolen, even though she did try to murder him. But she misses her child that she carried in her own belly, you know? Tessa wakes up on the floor. Madeline is fucking pissed. How dare you invade my mind? How dare you enter my thoughts while I slept and try to learn my secrets? There is a terrible price to pay for such a transgression, Tessa. They lock in battle. Tessa's like, I've been inside your consciousness, Madeline. I've seen its turmoil and distress. What deep-rooted pain you suffer over the years. Madeline is pissed. My very essence permeates you, suffuses your being, seeps into every pore. You're mine. And she is tempted to suffocate Tessa, but instead she just erases her memories of the fight. But this has awakened some things within Madeline. And we get her caption saying, what I was too fearful to dredge up alone, you helped bring to the surface of my mind. Every vile, uncaring act anyone has committed against me, from Scott Summers to Jean Grey to Scott's brother Havoc, all of the X-Men who abandoned me in my time of need, all the unpleasant truths I remember again, and one by one, each will pay for having crossed Madeline Pryor in her time of need, especially the worst of those who wronged me, the gene-manipulating monster, Mr. Sinister. So the image of her like holding baby Nathan is really uncomfortable, especially when you consider the potential sexual relationship with Nate Grey. We give that like very mom breastfeeding energy and you're like, oh no.
All very rough. It's cool that it happens because at least now you feel like she's going to have some direction, some kind of purpose, because it feels like she's just been floating along and being manipulated and lured into a lesbian throuple with Celine and Ella.
Ella.
I love that they bring Ella, and I love that they add Fitzroy to the mix. Like, okay, let's make it as camp as possible. It's nice that she's getting some, you know, she has some kind of purpose and she remembers all the bad shit that happens to her. In a lot of ways, that's a defining thing of Madeline Pryor, is her bitter resentment and animosity towards the people that wronged her.
So when we jump to X-Men 23 through 25, this is kind of the culmination of like the first few years of X-Men's stories. This is everything going crazy with Madeline. Madeline initially fights a character named Scribe. We don't have time to like gain her entrance into the Hellfire Club. And she draws out another queer future supervillain named Mountjoy, who, what is the gayest name in comic books? Mountjoy, perhaps.
Yes.
So there's a fight. Then she has sex with Sebastian Shaw for sure. Like, right, they fucked in this issue, right? Like, that's how.
Absolutely.
You, then she's in head-to-toe leather, and she is going after Nate, and she is there to fight Threnody, who's brimming with power. She's in a, she again, she draws energy from death. She's in a cemetery in winter. Madeline wants Nate back, and Threnody says the wrong fucking thing. Arturo, do you want to read Threnody here?
Please. I know you're a cheap carbon copy of some X-Witch. You were bred to breed, nothing more. I know you suffered delusions of grandeur along the way, made a bid for power as some kind of goblin queen, and paid for it with your life.
Then she fucking says the name Sinister, and
which
Madeline,
you do not want to do. Mm-hmm. Again, Madeline Pryor 102, do not mention Sinister.
Well, and don't call her a fucking broodmare either, right? So
bred Madeline to breed? Girl.
Madeline gives this like soft little smile and says, I'm a new woman now with my eye on a whole new prize. And Threnody looks at her and she can see with her eyes because this is her power. And she says,
you're still dead.
No, 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 no. I breathe. I think. I feel. I've got power. And I most certainly live. And then she drains all of fucking Threnody's energies away with a touch and leaves her like a corpse basically in the graveyard. And then she goes back to Switzerland and Nate is there and she fucking kisses him right on the mouth. Manolis, what are your thoughts on Madeline's looks through this era? She's gorgeous.
Thank you. I love the evolution of her outfits. Every new artist is trying to outdo the one before. And I love that the latest look is basically Bellstrap trying to hold her breasts in and just struggling to burst out. My favorite line from this issue is actually the dad joke that Kavanaugh opens with, where Madeline meets Threnody and is like, name is Madeline. You're charmed, I'm sure. Threnody replies, actually, it's Threnody.
We now have Madeline like working to seize power. Celine has corrupted her. It's hard to know, like maybe the Red Queen came for a particular reason. She lost her memory. I don't know what's exactly happening. But now guess who shows up? It's Jean fucking Grey, and Madeline attacks and there's a ship crash. Jean is bragging like, I fucked Scott and Cable is mine. And Madeline throws a damn fucking tantrum. Nate theorizes that when he landed on 616, that his need somehow recreated Madeline, but now he considers destroying her to give her peace, but she's too strong now. She says, I'm a free agent, finally, independent of you. Opens up whole new doors, don't you think? Whole new worlds of possibilities, and raises so many more questions without answers. And then she goes back to presumably fuck Sebastian Shaw some more, because that guy's great in bed. You gotta believe that.
You gotta admit.
Kinetic energy absorption resulting in more strength. This guy's
More you like hit him, like, yeah, that would get, yeah.
So the original intent, as Manolis pointed out, is this was Madeline. She's now like fully alive again, and she's back in the Marvel Universe in a new way.
I think she starts fucking Sebastian Shaw right now because she's finally scorned by Nate. So that's who she turns to at the end of the issue, because she just turns up in Shaw's bedroom and is like, yeah, let's do this now. I think it's the ultimate revenge on her side.
And this is why we love Madeline Pryor. She suffers no fools. She has no patience for the X-Men. She fucks all of you. I'm not going to deal with your shit. You let me down. I will never trust you again, kind of energy. But she also is a mom and she loves her kid. So the first thing she does, we get to jump over to the Cable book. And Cable's a character I resonated so much with in the 90s. This is a story called Temptation in the Wilderness. It's a beautiful story. Madeline pulls Cable into the astral plane. She's in her goblin look. He's in a cage initially, but they bounce around. They're in like Sinister's lab, his far future with Apocalypse and Alaska, where she was happy with Scott. They go to the Empire State Building, where she died at the hands of Jean Grey. And at the end of that story, by the way, Jean not only has taken Madeline's child, but also absorbs all of Madeline's energy, like her memories. So like, Madeline lives on in me now. Scott, you can have both of us. You can be with both women. It's a really rough story for Madeline. Claremont picks that up with that famous story where like Madeline has the nightmare where she's just a blank person with like no face, like no identity. So she's jumping around with Cable through this. And some of the dialogue here is just beautiful when you consider the mother-son relationship. She tells him, I tested you. I wanted to know how far you'd go for me. I wanted to know if you cared enough to fight for me, because she's been manifesting monsters. So she has a full grasp of her history now. She looks around the Sinister Lab manifestation. Perhaps you should try harder. This was my kindergarten. This was my school. This was my life. At least you know I'm your mother. You know Summers is your father. Who were my parents? Chemicals and test tubes? What of your childhood could possibly compare? Okay, don't love it. I'm a therapist. Don't don't love it when a parent tries to weaponize their own trauma against that of their child. Not my favorite. But then we get this kind of resulting in Nathan saying to her, "You, Madeline, you don't truly even exist. You're all the misery and misfortune that the real Madeline endured, given a semblance of life, all the things that keep Madeline's soul from being at rest." And then he rejects her. She says, "Help me destroy mutants." And then Jean Grey breaks through, which is not, you know, Nate needs help, of course. But she says to him as Nate's leaving, "You know you're wrong about me, Nathan. I am real, and in time, I will prove it." He says to Scott and Jean, Cable does when he's out of the astral plane, that he met a revenant that has yet to find peace. Ultimately, we may never fully understand her rebirth. We can only hope she'll eventually be at rest.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
I'm a sucker for a good trip through the astral plane, the beautiful, you know, visual exposition, and I'm thrilled to see her back with underboob. I think Madeline Pryor should always have underboob. This is the whole thing about Madeline, right? Like, at this point, is she real? Is she a ghost? Is she just his idea of her? Is there a soul there? I mean, it's a mess, but at least she's becoming aware of what a mess it is. We're all becoming aware of it.
If we're reading this as Madeline being the real Madeline and trying to create, like, a relationship with Nate in this, like, great show of power, it's interesting. But it's also interesting to read it as, like, the ghost of Madeline trying to make sense of things. The weirdest read is the Red Queen, right? Like, she's got Madeline's memories imprinted on her brain or some shit. I don't know.
This one was crazy. Again, in this era, every writer was having their own distinct take on her, because she turns up here and the way she wants to connect with her long lost son is, let's do genocide together, let's exterminate the whole mutant race and then rule over the world together. So it's a huge departure from anything that has been going on in X-Men. I would no prize it that this is the first time we see the Red Queen, because in the Cable book, she never actually shows up in the real world. She's always on the astral plane.
So there is a read of this. I like that. It's an interesting thought experiment to think of the other versions we've covered so far as the real Madeline.
It's also fun because over in the Cable book, even across different artists and different writers, she always wears a specific outfit just for meeting Cable, like the whole velvety thing.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. He recognizes her underboobs. So we're going to skip over some stuff with the Hellfire Club, the Harbinger of Apocalypse, Irene Merriweather. There's some stuff going on that's just not super consequential. We're going to jump back over to X-Man number 38, where Madeline senses that Nate Grey needs her. She's in black leather. "You needed me, Nate. I felt that in the heat of the blood pumping through my body and the breeze through every hair on the back of my skin. You called out to me in a slow, soft whisper, whether you know it or not. And I came, boy, in a heartbeat." This is sex pot energy for sure. Like, came in capital letters, right?
The 90s were wild, man. The overt sexual, like, beyond cheesecake.
Nate is wrestling with this, like, idea of unrestrained power and what that means and what am I capable of, but he's also dying. His power is burning him out and he's going through some shit. He's been around for 40 issues at this point. Madeline is finally back. We have a writer doing something with this relationship. He is looking into the future at his own death and he is with Madeline in the wilderness. She conjures a pure apple for him to eat and then he makes it just wither away.
A little heavy-handed on the symbolism, don't you think?
"You want me, Nate. You know you do. You need me."
"Once, maybe. When I first arrived here, I guess. Blinded by the possibilities and promise in every sparkling face, every glittering place. When I thought you needed me too. Now, though, Maddie, I don't even know who or what you are."
"I am what you made me, Nate. By mistake, of course." And she makes herself look like Jean Grey now. "I'm well aware that this is who you meant for me to be. Jean Grey, the one true heart's desire of my ex-hubby Scott Summers and every other member of the X-Men who wears pants, far as I can tell. Mother Teresa of all mutants everywhere. The Madonna herself to you, I suppose. This is who everyone wants me to be. But I'm not." She changes back. "I'm I'm so much better. But he rejects her and she's fucking pissed. He says,
I don't need you. I don't want you. You can't help me.
Wrong. You are already using me far more than you realize, boy, in ways that you could never begin to suspect. And I will not be dismissed or discarded ever again. And then she like leaves him to face the fucking great beasts from Alpha Flight who are like fucking elder gods. But she comes back. She says things like, my self-sacrificing days are way behind me. If we're reading this as Madeline Manolis, what's her motivation here? What's happening? She's like brimming with power. Is this Madeline or the Red Queen?
I think this is the first time that we actually see the Red Queen, because she's been gone a while. She was heavily involved in the Hellfire Club, and all of a sudden she shows up after a whole year of being away. And now she clearly has an agenda of stepping him over. And it's also a very interesting area. It's also developed this relationship where she keeps juicing him. Every other issue we see him, he's very down on energy, and she keeps pumping him up with some green energy to lift him up. So yeah. I think you can read this as her slowly digging her claws into him to gain control.
Yeah, the interesting read there that you're presenting, I kind of like it. Like, he initially created like a construct of Madeline, and now this is the point where the Red Queen takes it over. I think that's really interesting. As she's corrupting him slowly in this like very temptress kind of way. And, you know, she's given her Selene energy in her own way, I suppose. So in 41, Madeline's on the cover. She's holding Nate in her hands while like licking her lips. And the caption says, if Madeline Pryor can't have Nate, no one will. She's tending to like wounded Nate, but he's thinking of Threnody. In 42, Nate tries running away from Madeline, but she chases him down. Just looks like a fucking earthquake hits. They stop it. Then they go dancing together. Madeline's saying things like, you need another meal, maybe three, and a good night's sleep away from the rest of the world. You need to take care of that body, Nate. Everything you need is right here. And then things get fucking weird.
She's such a feeder in these issues. First she shows up with the apple, and then she makes the whole case of, oh no, you need to feed that body, Nate. It's like she's really plumping him up for slaughter at this point.
You created me and I came. It's very the witch from Hansel and Gretel, right? Like, eat the food and I'll climb in the fucking oven, you little bitches.
It's not subtle. Let me take care of that body for you. Like, she's really laying it on thick.
Okay, so there's a guy named The Witness that shows up. His name is Ness. This is a complicated guy who could get his own Patreon. But he's there because he's foreseen some bad futures about Nate. And there's some guys named the Psyops who show up. And then in the X-Men books, the Shadow King gets locked in Psylocke's brain and everyone loses their telepathy. And Nate's struggling, but Madeline won't let him go to the X-Men. And they kiss right on the mouth, right after Nate seems to manifest the Phoenix signature in space. And then they battle Holocaust, who's like another guy from the Age of Apocalypse, the big scary orange one who like is glowing with fucking energy. And then during the fight, Madeline panics because Nemesis says, I know what you are. In 44, it's very clear to me that they are sharing a bedroom. And Manolis, you seem to have a take on this. Are they sharing a bedroom or not?
They're clearly sharing a bedroom, but you can see that he goes to lie on the bed with her, but he lies over the bed sheets, like she's covered by the bed sheets, but he lies fully clothed on top of the bed sheets next to her. I think it's more sweet than that.
I think this woman would not have it any other way. I think she's fucking him.
They're absolutely fucking. I'm sorry. They are absolutely. It could not be more.
I wish they weren't, but I really think they are.
I wish they weren't. And I wish we could blame a retcon or but no, you clocked it from the jump. Like, everyone knows what's up going in, you know? Like, it's so, they're so fucking.
Also, in the scene where they're out in space, so you mentioned they kiss in space. It's a scene, Nate goes out, he manifests a Phoenix Raptor for whatever reason. But then he runs out of oxygen and she basically gives him mouth to mouth. But it's not even that innocent. A few issues later, there's another alien chick. She gives him mouth to mouth and he has this thought balloon saying, oh, this is nice, but it's not as nice as when Madeline gave me mouth to mouth and shared her oxygen to me. So, I mean, I don't think they're fucking, but I think he really wants them to be fucking.
I don't know. I think we could read it either way, but it's given some real sex pot energy. There's a mother and a son sharing a bed. It's, I don't know. It's it's odd to read it the other way for me. Okay, I'm going to cover some more stuff really quickly because then we got to get to the Red Queen retcon. There's a three-part crossover running between X-Men and Cable called Blood Brothers. There's a guy named Blacksmith who's a little insect Yoda guy from the future who's doing some shit trying to get Cable to go in a particular direction. And there's some guys named that he creates called the Technomes who give Nate some like dark visions and they lure him in to prevent a future and they go to Latveria. And now Strife is here with the Dark Riders. And there's a psychic attack on all the world's telepaths. And Madeline has to save Jean Grey from an attack in Alaska. And then she teams up with Cable. And then Strife covers himself in like powerful energy and like remakes Madeline into like a sluttier version of herself, like very Malice with like boots and open bodice and like spiky shoulder blades and crown and I don't know. Then she turns on Cable and Nate, and then Strife tries conquering Latveria and then the world and then time itself. But Madeline manages to like drain energy away and like defeat him, and then like Nabel and Kate swoop in. And it's really clearly indicated here that Madeline is a ghost being kept alive by psychic energy in this storyline. And then 49, that guy Witness basically asks Madeline, like, what are you? Confusing shit going on. There's some big adventures that she's kind of superfluous to before we jump to the crazy retcon.
In my notes, I have subtitled this as the taxi era because it's basically there just to teleport him to places he needs to be. that's basically, it's like, oh, Madeline, can you take me here? Can you take me there? And she just pops in this green smoke and takes him there. The one point I did feel for her is during that whole Strife thing, because I realized that Jean and Scott are living in the honeymoon cottage of Scott and Madeline in Anchorage. And I'm like, Scott, no.
Where she even admits Alaska's the one place I'm happy, but she has to rescue Jean there after she gets like remade in a slutty costume from her child's evil clone from the future, who is like the gayer version of all of them. This is crazy Summer's family drama, but it's not particularly good. It's just okay.
I just gotta say, my favorite part of the synopsis you sent over is about like two-thirds of the way in, you put, and then it gets complicated, and now at this point and things get weird. like it was fine before, but now things get weird. No, we're so past weird and complicated.
Cable 76, another deep continuity dive. Cable's being held in stasis as part of the 12, and Madeline, we're not talking about the 12 today, Madeline pulls his mind to the cabin where they've like declared a safe space to be able to talk. But in the end, Nate ends up choosing his teammates over her. She again, like, choose, pick me, right? Like, your loyalty must be with me. You know, guys, we'll do a Madeline Pryor episode someday, but this character has like PTSD and borderline personality disorder. I'm just throwing it out there as a diagnostic. I love her, but she's crazy. Anyway, she says, I understand, Nathan. Before all the madness, the hate, you were the best thing to ever happen to me. If nothing else, I'll always have the memory of those events. And she admits, all I am is a ghost on the psionic plane. And then she kind of fades away and you feel like she's gonna be gone, and that was her happy ending. And then Warren Ellis comes aboard. Okay, Manolis, do you want to tell us about Warren Ellis's crazy retcon? This is the end of the books. The X-Men line is getting ready to get shaken up in a major way, and they like fire all the creative teams and bring a bunch of new people in. Big like reboot at the end of this. It's kind of like that era right before Krakoa where everything was just crazy.
Warren Ellis basically comes aboard with the edict, you have 12 months, make these books the Vertigo of our X-Men line. And he brings in his own writers, his own artists. X-Men has the wildest turnout of all of them because he turns from this angsty 17-year-old to this topless, barefoot, leather-clad salmon figure with a big, very nice X on his chest and a new mission statement that's more like the Planetary.
It's giving like Planetary or even like Sandman vibes a little bit.
Yeah, it does. And he has, well, Warren Ellis basically directs and edits. He invites writers to do the actual writing for him. On this book, it's Steven Grant. And he opens up with a very highbrow story that we introduces the multiverse as not only existing as parallel realities, but also as realities that are above and below, that he introduces a sort of idea during that. And that leads to the second story arc, which is where we meet the Red Queen.
And X-Men 67, Nate wakes up and it's the fall of 2000 now, and he dreams about a city in Ecuador getting destroyed, but then he realizes it's actually destroyed. And Madeline basically says, I made you do it.
All those people dead because of us. Just tell me why.
You're You're making me angry now, Nate. You've no concept of what a bad, bad idea that is.
This is impossible. I made you. You only exist because of me.
That's a lovely fantasy. Every Nate Gay... Nate Gay is a different character. Every Nate Gray tries to cling to it. You created poor Maddie. Yes, I'm not your Maddie. You created a phantom, a door for me to walk through. When you made your Maddie, it was because you were waiting for me.
Who are you?
I'm Madeline Pryor, the only true Maddie Pryor you've ever known. I replaced your Maddie several months ago. I've been worming into your head ever since. The destruction of Quito, the city, was a test to ensure you're fully operational. I need an intact Nate Gray.
I don't understand.
I'll tell you the rest if you take me home.
Where's home?
Read the front of my mind. If you let me, I can show you the most amazing things. And he, like, takes her hand and they go floating through the fucking cosmos.
I'm gonna be sick.
No, you won't. You fight yourself too much. That sort of thing should be second nature to you. Time to realize your potential, Mr. Gray.
It's beautiful here. I've never smelled air so clean. Where are we?
And then they go to a big old city, and there's a man named Mr. Scratch who has a big old penis face.
I had not realized how much he looks like Star from Preacher until you wrote that sentence. He's basically her big old lapdog. He has a very interesting mutant power, but that they don't do a lot with, that he's immune to all other mutant powers. And he basically has a big old penis face because Wolverine, who they refused to name here, attacked him and he had to defend his queen. I love the dynamic that it's this ultimate lapdog that will do anything he tells her, that he shows the way that the other denizens of your world look up to her, basically.
So this is Earth 998, and Scratch is the, like, manservant, like, right hand, like Black Knight to the queen that is Madeline Pryor in this world.
Your mission was successful, Your Majesty.
As you can see, Mr. Scratch, this one is perfect. No trouble in my absence, I hope.
Rumblings on the Asian frontier. They'll see this news of your return spread.
Madeline, tell me what we're doing here, now.
Young man, speak only when the queen speaks to you, and speak meekly. You will find manners preferable to death.
Gallant as ever, Mr. Scratch, but poor Nate is ignorant, not profane. I've gone to considerable effort to domesticate our young guest. Please don't antagonize him. And we learn that Scratch is the queen's protector, and she's been fishing for Nate Grays for 8 fucking years. They ride around on a winged ship called the Ornithopter into a place called the Brilliant City, where Scratch says,
"The maker who made the Ornithopters discovered the spiral of wall and built a device through which to see them. At the queen's request, he constructed a great engine to project here from parallel Earth to parallel Earth."
So they're talking about Forge, I think, right? So Forge built a spiral. She's having a war with the Asian side of her planets. And she needs power to destroy them. So she's hopping around the multiverse trying to get a Nate Gray that she can manipulate, use up, and then, like, defeat the Asians on her world. It's a really weird story, you guys. I don't understand it, really. It's also very confirmed here out loud that Nate is 17, and again, implied that they've been fucking. So Nate's dressed in golden robes. Maddie's in this, like, high-collared, low-necked, like, red gown. It's all, like, cleavage. It's very, like, Mary Queen of Scots, like, dramatic sleeves and, like, red ribbons and golden spirals. It's very off with her head. Her hair's done up. Scratch introduces her. Her Majesty Madeline One, Queen, resurrected Queen of Britain, High Protector of the Unified Commonwealth, Sacred Mistress of the Order of the Black Knights, and Absolute Empress of the North and the Breachlands. I don't know what Ellis is doing here, you guys. So Maddie introduces Nate to Earth 998. It's time you were made aware of the nature of reality. Our victory over the Asian Empire is now assured. She takes her throne. She says, like, I will force you to sit if I have to. She can make him do whatever he wants. Like, you can fucking obliterate cities. And he says,
"You're not my Maddie."
"I am. Did you honestly think you could make a Maddie Pryor out of thin air on a whim? Did you never wonder where the whim came from? A Nate Gray does not create. A Nate Gray destroys. From the beginning, I was there sowing the idea of me in your head. You made a dream and I stepped in to flesh it out. For a time, I was only what you dreamed I should be. A necessary risk to snare you. I have been many Maddie Pryors on many Earths, all with a singular goal, to find you." She's basically hopping around like fucking her kid on every planet. She's really uncomfortable. whole story. She gives him a view of the multiverse. There's a bunch of worlds where Nate Gray turns evil. Okay, so guys, this means she's hopping around to realities in which the Age of Apocalypse just happened over and over and over again, and Nate Gray comes back in time and goes evil every time. It's a crazy multiverse here. He now knows what he is, she says, what all Nate Grays have been on every Earth. The ultimate telecine, designed with a doomsday weapon for a mind. The climax of the evolution of weapons. Most Nate Grays are faulty. Most die young. My own died horribly. Their creators load them with genetic time bombs. The ultimate defense against the ultimate weapon. I needed a Nate Gray that worked. Finally, after years of false starts and dead ends, I found you. In the months we've been together, I've subtly wormed my way through your mind, placing my controls there. You're my weapon now. And she's captured a spy who is an Asian woman, and she forces Nate to burn the woman to death. And she's like, I'm gonna kill everyone with you. Like, you're my fucking tool now. So in 69, it's 69, guys. Maddie puts on her like leather body armor, and she's like got swirly metal over her boobs and like a fin helmet. And Nate like learns that she like gathers Nates, uses them up, bites the Asians, and then like goes looking for another Nate. And he meets the like OG Nate of this world, maybe, but also he came from a different world but was like the first one. And he reanimates the dead corpse of Forge, who's like, I loved Maddie. And will you give us Forge's speech here, Arturo?
At the end of the 19th century, Queen Maddie ruled an empire that covered all the world. Old and sick, on her deathbed, she ordered that her corpse be burned so she might rise again from the ashes. Her corpse was burned. She did not rise. Her end was the end of peace. Independence ravaged the globe like a plague. Asia broke free and parts of Europe and most of the southern lands. Political infighting corroded the empire's foundation. War was all the world knew. Then the miracle. Maddie Pryor did return, a burning vessel of justice and vengeance. She led us to take back half the world, and in time, he learned, she was not Maddie Pryor, but an imposter from another Earth. Her power decimated. She was cast off her own world for heinous crime. Her true name is Jean Grey.
The fucking Summers family is easier to explain than that fucking paragraph that you just read. I hate this story for this reason. We have an alternate world.
I hate this so much.
We have an alternate world where there's a benevolent queen, Madeline Pryor, who apparently has a like happy child, Nate Gray, and she's fucking Forge. But then when she dies, like the empire breaks up, and then a Jean Gray from another reality who's evil comes and takes her place and is now trying to claim this multiversal station of power by gathering Nate Grays from other realities and posing as Madeline Pryor in each of them and posing as Madeline in this world so that she can fucking conk. I don't know what. God damn it. I hate it so much. Middleus, what are your thoughts?
You forgot that this all takes place in the 19th century as well.
Fuck, I hate it. I really hate it.
I love it. Because if you don't know the continuity, it's pretty simple. So yeah, it's a Queen Maddie and she's hunting for Nate Grays. And I love that they're using this as a placeholder, as a Nate Gray, a Maddie Pryor. If you know the history, this is insane. So she goes to other realities and she has to find the clone of herself to step into. And then she has to find not her son, but an alternate reality of her son parallel to that world. No, it's crazy, but it's also so much fun.
It hurts my head to think about it. Like, it was convoluted enough, but then shoehorning evil Jean Grey in is just unnecessary.
There are stories out there with crazy continuity that are really fun. Have you guys read Extreme X-Men Volume 2, which is Dazzler leading a team of reality-hopping X-Men to go from reality to reality to kill evil Charles Xavier's? It's great. That's fun. This one is so unnecessary. Back when I worked on the handbooks, there'd be like a writer, this happens in FF, or like fucking Kang the Conqueror. Fucking hate Kang the Conqueror. There'll be like an image where they'll introduce like a council of Reed Richards or like a council of Dr. Dooms. And there's like an artist that will draw like 150 versions of Dr. Doom. And like one looks like a dinosaur and one's like silver armor and one's old and one's a kid and one's a fucking fish. And the handbook guys, we would have to write down every one of those fucking characters and assign like a reality designation to them. This story gives me that energy. And it's a trauma recall. I hate it. I But Manolis, I'm glad you like it. We can agree.
I do. I love what Steve Grant said on your show about what he intended for her as well. That this Jean Grey is the 616 Jean Grey, but the one that the Phoenix created. So this is, instead of dying on the moon, she crossed realities and came to this and decided to become a Madeline Pryor.
Oh, it's rough. Okay, so Scratch attacks and destroys Forge's talking corpse and then reveals his mutant power, which is like, no mutant power can affect me. He kills the like other Nate Grey, and then the Red Queen prepares to conquer half of the planet, but she ends up fighting Nate and like draws all her life from the planet and kills all of her followers. And then like Nate unleashes his own power into her and she's consumed, and he blows up and like dies and comes back and dies and comes back, and then creates like the fucking Age of X-Man right before Krakoa, where he's like a messianic guy who created his own world where nobody's allowed to fuck. That's where he lives now.
After spending 5 years fucking his mom, I think. It's the next logical step. Having sex leads you to fucking your own mother, so it's bad. I should stop this.
So if we take this just from Nate's perspective, Nate is created in a lab in the Age of Apocalypse. He meets his world's version of the genetic template of his parents. He lands in our world where he creates a version of Madeline Pryor. He later meets Cyclops, Jean Grey, Cable, and Strife. He fucks his mom for a while. Then he has to go on this reality where all the other versions of him are evil, but also were used as tools by a woman posing as an alternate reality version of his alternate reality counterpart's mom, who was benevolent, but she's really evil, and they were fucking, but then he destroyed her. The end. Fucking hate it. It's so unnecessary.
It's so unnecessary. And again, you're amazing for being able to formulate that sentence.
You know, even after this conversation and all the research, I still struggle to like understand it. It's really exhausting. Okay, we have to just do this very quickly. There's a more recent storyline pre-Kakoa where there's a version of Madeline Pryor who creates something called the Sisterhood of Evil Mutants, where the plot line is basically she brings the Asian version of Psylocke, Kenon, back from the dead in Betsy's body. And
it's the opposite of that. Yeah, because he brings back Betsy Braddock's conscience, who has been in exiles, into her original body.
Oh, right. Betsy Braddock, the Asian woman, or excuse me, the British woman is in the Asian Psylocke's body and she dies. And this Madeline Pryor brings back that version of Betsy and reanimates the corpse of the Asian Psylocke. And then later... God damn it. And then later, Sapphire Styx puts like her soul back in her British body so that Kenon can occupy Psylocke again. Everyone reading Alyssa Wong's Psylocke, don't worry about any of this. Just go enjoy the book.
You thought Madeline Pryor was so complicated.
It is. It's the worst.
It's funny because I realize now in hindsight, this was like the Red Queen that I'd actually read was this. And going back and reading all the X-Man stuff kind of has blown my mind. But this was fun because it was like she's just pulling together the most pussy sisterhood, like just fantastic. You have Lady Mastermind,
both of them,
Lady Deathstrike, Spiral.
Yeah. It's
bitch, and it didn't need to make sense. Well, look at this team. I love it, but yeah.
Attack the X-Men to get a hair of Jean Grey, literally, so that she can like try to like create a new body of Jean for her to live in. So there's
the plot is insane on this.
Yeah. And then she like withers away. But the theory from fans, it's never been confirmed continuity wise. But the theory from fans is this: like the fucking Red Queen trying like to get a place of power back in the Marvel universe, and it fucking hurts my head in the way the X-Men story does. I hate this character. I hate her. Leave her to rot in hell. I hate her. What are your concluding thoughts, you guys, on this crazy story?
Overall, for the whole thing, I didn't like it as I was reading it as a teen, to be honest, because this never felt like Madeline Pryor. I'm a Madeline Pryor purist. I still stick to the fact that, you know, Madeline was right. Madeline was nice. She got demon possessed and led to the whole Goblin Queen fiasco. And it always drove me wild that every time she's come back, it's been evil beats Goblin Queen. And it's never the Madeline Pryor we read for 4 years before these 3 months of Inferno. So, but reading it now and having the Red Queen in the back of my mind, I quite enjoy it. I think it's a very enjoyable version of evil djinn, and it's quite simple in concept once you get to the Red Queen retcon. And I love just how, in the words of Latrice Royale, what a bitch she is, being in total control of herself. She knows what she wants. She wants to destroy Asia. She wants to have this twink use as a weapon, and she goes for it.
I wonder if, like, I don't know, were they trying to work out some sort of colonialism British energy here, where, like, the queen should be able to conquer Asia with whatever fucking weapon she chooses, and if she wants to fuck her own son to do it, let her do it. It's very, I don't know, it's weird, you guys. Connor Goldsmith and I weirdly are united in our love of characters. A lot of the characters I profiled or, like, written about for Marvel are characters he loves. For example, Spiral and Threnody and Selene. I am not a Madeline Pryor fan, which is crazy. I love Jean. I'm not a big Maddie or the Phoenix fan. I love the stories with them in it, but I'm not a huge Maddie guy, even though I understand the love of her. Zeb Wells can fucking write Maddie all day. Steve Fox could write all her all day.
I am a fan of Maddie Pryor, especially in the Capable Hands you just mentioned. Not a fan of the Red Queen, I think, and I hate that I'm even going to say this, but I think the entire continuity of the Red Queen makes a pretty good case for AI being used to write stories, because it might have been better than this. This is kind of like a cautionary tale of what can happen when too many people are trying to do something with a character, but none of it really connects. So it's just bad on top of bad on top of bad. The Red Queen is a mess.
We don't know what the intent of the various writers were, or how editorial changed things, or how, like, the standards and protocols people change things. You know, like, Marvel got bought out by Disney. There's bankruptcy. There's a lot of changes happening during this time.
But we do know that at the onset of this character, it was a known fact that she was, in some version, the mother of Nate Gray.
Yes.
That was a known thing. And every creator who took the baton after that kind of just doubled down on it and said, oh, you want a mess? Bitch, I'll make a mess. And they made it even worse.
Hellfire Club Maddie was fun. Maddie and Cable's interactions were fun. The rest of this is just a fucking mess. But I understand the appeal, and I love a good art, and I love a good soap opera. But like I said, the Summers family is easier to explain than this 1-4 issue arc for me, which is craziness. I like to ask sometimes, like, what's the story we need, or what's the story you're left curious about? I don't even want to know. I want to dump this character in the trash. Which is rare for me to say. Nate Gray is already so complicated. Cable's complicated. Strife is complicated. But there's a certain level of fun, and then there's a certain level of, no, that was too far for me. I'm fast-forwarding about 60 seconds from when we end this call, where Manolis is going to go to his partner, and your partner's going to say, did you have fun? And Manolis was like, yeah, that was fucking great. And then Arturo's going to go to his partner, and your partner's going to say, did you have fun? And Arturo says, no. Normally, I love Gray Malkin Lane, but I have a fucking migraine now.
God, yeah, I have a headache, but it is always fun. Always fun on Gray Malkin Lane.
I am grateful for you both. Thank you for hanging out. I'm grateful to be your friends, and I can't wait to hang out again. As we're wrapping up, I'd love to hear any final thoughts. Where can people find you online? And is there anything you want to plug? We're going to put this out on the Patreon on December 11th. Let's go, Arturo, and then Manolis.
Thanks so much for having me. This was so much fun. I guess I am going to plug at Mr. Toybox on Instagram. I need to start selling off some of my collection, so look out for that if you're interested in really great action figures at a reasonable price. I will be offloading some of that to pay for my oncoming wedding, date TBD. So I'll plug that, Mr. Toybox.
You're lovely, my friend.
Use code Gray Malkin for 10% off. I haven't set up anything. Final thoughts on the Red Queen. I just really hope that us having this whole conversation and listeners listening to this doesn't just help her grab a foothold in this reality and somehow enter into the new Jean Grey storyline, because we don't need any more Red Queen.
Use Gray Malkin for 10% off, and use Oedipus X spelled correctly for 15% off.
Yes. And, that code I will definitely honor.
Over to Manolis.
I have nothing to plug. People who want to follow me on my socials at The Comics Greek. I've abandoned Twitter, but I've just started on Blue Sky like everyone else has, so please feel free to follow me there. Final thoughts? I regret nothing. Revisiting these stories, the Steve Grant run after, was it 20 or so years? They were very enjoyable. I wish they could have kept going, because they were all cancelled for Morrison, the Morrison era, I think it would have continued very well over there. I invite people to go and have a read to them. I think they hold up very nicely even today. And I'm quite glad to have a sort of Red Queen or Goblin Queen around, because fills the gap that writers want to use a Goblin Queen Maddy Pryor, and allows Maddy Pryor herself to be written as Sisubi, as Maddy Pryor. So I'm happy to have both options, basically, cover all the needs.
I'm really glad we did this episode, because it solidified the Red Queen information in my brain, like, once and for all. I can leave it there, and I can understand it, and then I can reference it as needed. But, you know, when you look at the summer stuff, we love it because of the complications, but we kind of don't also. You know, the one story we never got is Madeline Pryor confronting Mr. Sinister in the 616 universe. Like, that would have been interesting, seeing her kind of, I don't know, this is one of those that's so hard to explain. The Phoenix Force is so hard to explain. The Red Queen is so hard to explain. Cable and Strife are easy. Like, let's do a clone and a future and a time travel story. I am here for it. But when we're talking about fucking psychic entities from other reality, like, wow, this was a crazy one. But I'm so grateful to you both for taking this journey with me. The Rachel and Hope Summers of it all. Like, there's so many tangents we barely even skirted on. But God, just fucking complicated. This was a mess. And I'm smiling ear to ear. So lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I keep my own social media private because I got kiddos. The two of you are welcome to follow me. Just ask. You can follow GrayMalkin_Lane on Instagram, where I'm regularly interacting with the stories and the content there. We are building toward the end of 2024, which means the Silver Age is done on my show at the end of this year. And we launch into the new year with a new logo and a new song and a new format. And I'm very excited to share it all with all of you. The next Patreon you can watch for immediately after this, there will be two characters we're closing the year out with. One of them is Gideon, who's a delightful external character, very queer energy, high ponytail, green hair. I love him. And the other one, since the Kraven the Hunter movie's coming out, we're going to cover Kraven's gay mutant son, Al Kraven. Bet you haven't heard of that guy, but we're going to have a good time. So thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for the ongoing support. Thank you, Manolis. Thank you, Arturo. We will see you all back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.